Interview with Walter Williams, April 24th, 1980, Long Beach Public Library, by Greg Perkins, Cal State University Long Beach Oral History Resource Center. Mr. Williams, I was wondering if you could give me some of the personal background or family background that might have had some influence on why you became involved in trade unionism.
Well, probably indirectly, it had an influence, and maybe directly. I'm probably in no position to say truthfully that it had a bearing on why I became involved, in the labor struggle, organized labor. I'm not sure, but I know that we were very poor people, and my mother raised my brother and I. She was separated from my father, and I think I was about a year old or something, maybe less than that, and she did the job. So it was kind of tough on her, and my brother and I, at a very early age, began working, trying to help provide the funds, which really exposed me to trade unionism. At a very early age, I was around, 18. 19 years old, and I realized that, in order to work in certain jobs, you had to consider becoming a union member, and I found that oftentimes it was necessary, in order to even get a job. Mm-hmm. And my work began in the produce industry, as I recall, at a very early age, long before I even thought about unions. 13 years of age, I was driving a truck. It was an old Mack truck. And the Japanese people and Oriental people, more or less, controlled that industry. There were very many of them. They had the farms, and they also did the wholesaling and retailing. And I started working for a Japanese wholesale and retailer. And I think what they call at that time the city market was located on 9th and San Pedro and extended south, I think, to about 11th or 12th Street. And I learned about hard work there at 13 years of age because I was lifting those crates and cabbage and carrots and boxes of potatoes and what have you, And sort of grew up to a degree in the produce industry. And I think it was when I was about 21 years, about 20, 21 years of age, when I was approached by a union steward, and I was still working there, and I was told that I had to join the union there. And that was the Teamsters Local 630. Very powerful, and it's still down there, and it really controls those jobs. And of course, there was no problem. At that time, I really didn't know that much about trade unionism and organized labor. Just the fact that I know, well, it was just something you have to deal with, in order to work. But I soon found out that that particular union, and it was an AFL union at the time, and the teachers had a pretty sorry policy when it came to dealing with ethnic minorities. my experience was that my brother and I were both working for a market, and it was Sailor's Ranch Market, and we had, well, they had two trucks there. My brother was driving one, I was driving the other, and the experience was that they somehow got my employer, his name was Walter Greenberger, and told him that if he didn't get rid of one of those black drivers, that you know, they were going to get him in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And so he proceeded to lay me off. No explanation hardly behind it, except that, well, I'm sorry, I got to lay you off. But how it came to light was that after my assuming, well, it was, you know, it was rough, but he couldn't afford two drivers. And I went to the market the next day to try to pick up a little extra work, do whatever I could, make a few bucks. And I saw this Caucasian fellow on my truck. So, I mean, you know, one makes two. And so I was furious, and I immediately challenged him and asked him what he was doing up there. You know, he says, look, I haven't got anything to do, and I threatened, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And here I was just newly married and expecting a child, you know. I mean, my wife was expecting a child. And so it hit me, you know, when what goes on here really hit me. It really hit me in the face. I mean, really hard, you know. And I said, hey, I said, look, you're going to come down, I'm going to pull you down. He said, look, don't start any trouble. He said, it's not me. He said, the union gave me this job. He said, I didn't take it away. So I immediately went to the union office, and I had to wait around for a while because it was quite early, but I waited until I knew someone was in there, and they came in another way. I would be at the front door. And I began to raise hell about it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they claimed they didn't know anything about it. No, we don't know anything about it. Look, you better cool off. This is coming from the secretary. He says, if you want to, you know, you want to do something about it, you'll have to get on the agenda. You know? So I didn't know anything about an agenda. In fact, I don't think I had even attended the first union meeting, you know, and they weren't held too regularly. Anyway, as I can recall. But anyway, to make a long story short, in that situation, I threatened the president who was there. Lopez was the secretary. He introduced me to the president because, I mean, I was like passing the buck. It wasn't me talking to him. And I told the president, I said, look, if you guys don't get me my job back, you know, I'm going to not only go to court, I said, but I'm going to tell all of the rank and filers about it, and all your members what kind of protection they're not really getting, you know. And not fully realizing that this was purely a discriminatory thing. I mean, a lot of the white members would have felt very secure in this, I guess, you know, but there were a lot of ethnic minorities employed, a lot of Chicanos, and I know where, I'm sure, my brother and I had made quite a few friends amongst all groups, and they would have been very surprised, and I'm sure a lot of them would have resented also the fact that they would take a job away on this basis, you know, on a racial basis.
And, Mexican Americans were looked on a little differently than blacks, though, in that period, weren't they?
Yeah, they seemed to. The way I observed it is, you know, I can recall accurately. There seemed to be somewhat of a little more favoritism in terms of employment. There seem to be a few more of them employed. Now, I can't say whether that was really discriminatory or not, because they were there in abundance numbers, I mean, in large numbers.
But the Secretary of the Union was...
Well, yeah, he was Chicano. Well, okay. Which, of course, means that, you know, the rank and file consisted, certainly, of more Chicanos than black members. And I found that this is how it goes anyway. I mean, people vote in unions. It has been in the past. I don't think the pattern has changed too much. In fact, certainly not in my union, ILWU. They vote on a very nationalistic basis. And anyway, they told me to cool off, and they would look into it. They'd see what happened and all that, and didn't promise anything. And they said, but the way you're going to really solve this is by getting on the agenda. You know, I said, the last thing I told them, I said, let me tell you one thing. I said, I don't know what the hell an agenda is. So, well, that's the program for the union meetings. That's the way we do things in order. He says, you first get on the agenda, and we will get to you, you know, when we get to you. That's it. You know? And I told him, I said, look, you can put me on the agenda if you want. I said, but I'm going to speak at this next meeting. I said, the only way that you're going to stop me is that you're going to have a bigger army than mine. And I said, because I'm going to have one. When I get through telling these guys, tell me what happened. I said, you'll have your job cut out trying to stop them. And I really didn't know who I was talking to at the time. You know, I was green as grass. And I later found out that my brother did too. And we were dealing with some pretty tough people. You know, we just didn't know it. And for the moment, I didn't give a damn at the time. And he could have told me who he was, and it couldn't, you know, wouldn't have anything for the moment. Because when you're emotionally upset, you're ready to sometimes do it now. So, meanwhile, my brother got in a fight with a steward. He also saw this trouble, and he challenged the steward. And they got into a brawl about it. It was just, yeah. And, but to wind this up, my first real clash with race discrimination in unions. I attempted to go to this meeting. I talked to a lot of rank and filers and told them to meet me there. A number of them assured me that they would be there. And they were really disturbed and really shocked over the fact that this could happen. And particularly the black brothers, you know, they all felt pretty shaky. And many of the Chicano fellows were pretty irate about it. And I have their commitments that they'd be there to take this thing apart. But when I went to that Union Hall, I was there early. I was going to be there to send my troops, you know, get it all organized. These guys met me. Lee Owen was the name of the president. What's his name? Dan Lopez, the secretary. I'm not sure. Okay, first name. They said, hey, look, you got your job back. Your truck is over there. To, I think it's somewhere, parked somewhere on San Julian. They had a service station there. It was a big mistake. So we've got that all squared away. And so look, you know, just forget about it. Well, I was so elated, and at the same time, I was a little distrustful of this, so I went over to see. And sure enough, the truck was there, the keys were there, and the guy was expecting me. He said, hey, you're supposed to pick this truck up yet. go pick the truck up. But it didn't last too long, frankly, because about 2 weeks later, they pulled my brother over. I think it was another set of the two or three guys in the car. And he was en route somewhere to one of Wally's stores. And somewhere, pick up something. And they pull him over and threaten him. And my brother said he saw a big old gap in this guy's shoulder holster. And the guy told him, he said, I'm just going to warn you. If you or your brother give us just one bit of trouble, just any kind, you're going to, if they find you, you're going to look like a thief. Both of you. So I guess that was because my brother had challenged the chairman's kid. It was Carl Winshank. Winshank, I believe. And they had gotten into this brawl. And me, because I had the audacity, I mean, to challenge the president of Local 630 and the secretary, But I meant what I said. I was going to go to the Sentinel newspaper, and I was going to call up the Daily Press, and I was going to, I meant that. And I'm glad things turned out as they did, because it could have been worse. I might have been a memory long ago, you know. But what actually happened was I put together, and he told me about this and asked me what I wanted to do about it. I said, look, I want to live, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, I said, we will, you know, we'll have a while to deal with this. I said, but right now, I said, I'm not going to be asking you to lay your neck on the line, you know. And I said, I'll just, you know, chalk this up as a bit of experience and something that I'll probably have to deal with later on. But I think the best way to deal with it right now is to just go ahead and let it go. And that, of course, preceded my employer coming to me again and telling me, Walt, I really have to let you go this time. You know? But he says, before, he says, I go along with what they want. He said, I'll drive that GD truck myself. And the guy really had hard trouble. Wally Greenberger was no had hard trouble then. I don't think this hard. And he drove the damn truck for quite a while. And then later on, I guess he figured out another way to deal with it. He had his produce manager at the ranch market, who was there at the ranch market all the time. He hardly did any driving at all. He had him take the truck out occasionally, so economically he kind of benefited. And I guess he could pass that or get by. He did get by with it for quite a while.
What year was that?
This was in 39. And 39. Yeah, this was in 39.
I just want to make sure.
How were unions viewed in the community around that time? Did you speak to your neighbors about this, and what were their attitudes towards unions in general?
Well, not my neighbors, because somehow or other, I mean, we never cultivated a real neighborly pattern, you know, I mean, just making friends with a lot of neighbors in the area. But, of course, my friends knew about it. I had to, you know, they would know about it because I'm a steaming man, you know. And I left there and I went to Magnus Brass and Lead. That's a foundry in Maywood. And believe me, I looked for a job. I needed a job in the worst kind of way, because as I told my first wife, my first child. So when I had this opportunity to go to work as a laborer at Magnus Brass and Lead, I had no gloves. Before there. I had lunch in the beginning, but somebody had any to know me, you know. And so I worked my bare hands, but before I left there, my hands were raw. They were just bleeding. They gave me a job shoveling sand out of a boxcar. And I had used a shovel before, but not like that, you know. And, but I was determined to stay there, and I stayed there, I guess, 6 months, maybe 8 months, around 8 months. And in the process of working there, I found out that the same pattern existed. They had a lunch room and a locker room for the blacks, and separate locker room for the whites and the Chicanos, and whatever else.
For the union job?
No, this was non-union. And also, a very early period of my employment there, I became interested in, you know, trying to make it, you know, up the ladder. But in just a short time, I found out that there was no way up. And I was a laborer, and that was it. And I asked my buddy, the guy, Bill Campbell, a fellow who got me the job there. Well, how come? You know, I see this molder here, he's a Chicano. There's another molder, he's a Chicano. And this other fellow looks like he might be Filipino. And I said, what, you know, how come, you know? He said, don't ask me. He said, but that's the way it is, you know. And I found out later that really was the way it was. They had a couple of older black fellows working there. One was, they both tended to furnace. Oh, and they had one more fellow who was a utility man. He drove the truck around, made deliveries, and he had a pretty soft job. But out of about, 25 guys, 30 guys in the plant. You know, just that was all there was to it. I mean, I could maybe look forward to retiring and becoming a utility truck driver if I lasted that long. No way into the the semi-skill, which was core making and molding, which they considered more. I think if I can remember correctly, it was something like 21 cents, 22 cents, something. And into 40. I tried to organize the place because I realized that that was my only way out. I had found out a little about the CIO, and I liked their program. They had built into their constitution a no discrimination clause, and they said this extended into their contracts and talking with some of the people there, the CIO. And,
do you know Reville Clayton?
Oh, yeah. I know him very well. But he wasn't one of the fellows that I talked to earlier. I met him a little later on. So I said, well, if I'm going to stay here, I'm going to try to organize the place, and this will give me, you know, a better shot at making higher wages. And, I didn't want to remain a laborer because my lifespan has been shortened, and, you know, I'd be living from day to day on the kind of wages that they were paying laborers. And the CIOs at that point to me seemed like a whole new world, you know, because I knew the AFL was very powerful. It was practically the only union that I'd ever known anything about, had any dealings with, and I was sorry, dealings, you know. And so CIO was a newer union, just, you know, beginning to really do a job. And it was just what I needed, and just what the place needed, and so I went after it. And they went after me. In a very short time, they had me out of there. I had got most of the black fellows, I'd say about 90% of the black fellows, to join my cards. to become members of CIO, and they didn't bother me until I went after some of the white fellas. And I began to get a few of them to join, and got a few of them to come to Chicago to come to the meeting. And one day they had it all laid out for me one morning. They just waited for this opportunity. I guess it wasn't the first day that they had planned to fire me, but I left a pot, what we call a pouring pot, underneath the furnace. And because I'd gotten some hot metal down in my shoe and it burned the hell out of me, I'd made a couple of trips before, but it, you know, it was getting worse. I wanted to get the metal out. I wanted to get dressed. So I called one of the fellows off of the floor, one of the shakers, another term for a laborer, a black fellow, to substitute for me, to relieve me on the pouring, you know, the pot. And I went into the first aid, you know, to have the wound, the burn taken care of. When I came out, the foreman was standing there, you're fired. You know, so, you know, I was into that. I mean, I wanted to jump him because I didn't like him anyway, and I knew I was going. He took off, and me right behind him, and we were into the, he went into the office and ran behind the counter. So I didn't go behind the counter. I stopped, and so the clerk there had my check already. He was grinning. He says, well, there's no need to get disturbed. He says, enough said. He says, cool off. He says, all right, here's your check. You know. So that was very fast. I mean, that's some kind of a record.
That's the way it is.
Yeah. So, well, following that, I did a little organizational work, voluntary for the CIO. Because you can imagine how enthused I was, you know, about the organization. As I told you, I was very enthused about the CIO. Period, you know, being the kind of organization it was. So. And after a few field trips, helping some of the organizers, I was told, hey, I think we're going to have a job for you. Sure enough, they gave me a job. I became first Los Angeles Industrial Union Council black organizer.
Yeah.
And, I was, I guess, 40. I stayed there for about a year.
How did you get introduced to the CIO?
Who am I trying to organize Magnus Brass and Lead
right.
into the CIO, into the mine workers union, mine mill and smelter workers union?
Was the CIO holding public meetings in the black community, or? I'm not sure.
No, I went to, you know, I heard about it, and I went to,
Just read about it in the paper?
I'm trying to think. I'm not sure. I don't recall just how I wound up there, but I wound up.
But they weren't...
Somebody told me about it, I'm sure.
They weren't holding any... mass meetings in the black community at that
point. Not that I can recall. Somebody told me that the CIO, and I cannot recall who it was.
Okay.
And I found out where the headquarters was down on Avalon, 5859 Avalon Boulevard. And I went in and talked with the secretary, there, and they referred me to the Mine, Mill, and Smelter Workers Union. And I began talking with them, and they told me, well, you do the job, you know, you're in there, we'll give you the membership cards. That's the way I was. Yeah.
Where did you go from there once you became the organizer, industrial organizer?
Where did I go from there? What did I do?
What did you do?
Well, we organized everything that we could. the project I became most interested in, one of the projects was trying to organize the LA Railway.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Because they had a very discriminatory employment program there, because blacks at that time were confined. They were restricted to menial jobs, coach cleaners and car cleaners, you know, cleaning street cars and the motor coaches and all that sort of thing. And I saw hope in, you know, joining the CIO, they could be upgraded. But in the meanwhile, while I was organizing, helping to organize, because it was a big drive. We lost it, however. We lost it. It was a big battle, because we lost it to the Fayetteville transport workers or something. Anyway, I became acquainted with Reverend Clayton D. Russell, who was the head of the People's Independent Church then, and he was a very aggressive person.